Appeal to Ministers. I was shown, December 10, 1871, the dangers of Brother Blank. His influence upon the cause of God is not what it might be and should be. He seems to be in blindness as to the result of his course. He does not discern what kind of a wake he leaves behind him. He does not labor in a manner that God can accept. I saw that he was in as great peril as was Moses Hull before he left the truth. Moses Hull trusted in himself. He thought he was of so great value to the cause of truth that the cause could not spare him. Brother Blank has felt very much the same. He relies too much on his own strength and wisdom. If he could see his weakness as God sees it, he would never flatter himself or feel in the least to triumph. And, unless he makes God his dependence and strength, he will make shipwreck of faith as surely as did Moses Hull. He has not in his labors drawn strength from God. He has depended upon an excitement to arouse his ambition. In laboring with a few, where there is no special excitement to stimulate, he loses his courage. When the labor goes hard, and he is not borne up by this special excitement, he does not then cling the firmer to God, and become more earnest to press through the darkness and gain the victory. Brother Blank, you frequently become childish, weak, and inefficient, at the very time when you should be the strongest. This should evidence to you that your zeal and animation are not always from the right source. I was shown that here is the danger of young ministers who engage in discussion. They turn their minds to the study of the Word to gather the sharp things, and they become sarcastic, and, in their efforts to meet an opponent, too frequently leave God out of the question. The excitement of debate lessens their interest in meetings where this special excitement does not exist. Those who engage in debates are not the most successful laborers and the best adapted to build up the cause. By some, discussion is coveted, and they prefer this kind of labor above any other. They do not study the Bible with humility of mind, that they may know how to attain the love of God, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ, which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. Young preachers should avoid discussions, for they do not increase spirituality or humbleness of mind. In some cases, it may be necessary to meet a proud boaster against the truth of God in open debate. But generally, these discussions, either oral or written, result in more harm than good. After a discussion, the greater responsibility rests upon the minister to keep up the interest. He should beware of the reaction which is liable to take place after a religious excitement, and not yield to discouragement himself. Men who will not admit the claims of God's law, which are so very plain, will generally take a lawless course, for they have so long taken sides with the great rebel in warring against the law of God, which is the foundation of his government in heaven and earth, that they are trained in this labor. In their warfare, they will not open their eyes or consciences to light. They close their eyes, lest they shall become enlightened. Their case is as hopeless as was the Jews, who would not see the light which Christ brought to them. The wonderful evidences of his messiahship, by the miracles he performed in healing the sick, and in raising the dead, and doing the works which no other man had done or could do, instead of melting and subduing their hearts, and overcoming their wicked prejudices, inspired them with satanic hatred and fury, such as Satan possessed when he was thrust out of heaven. The greater light and evidence they had, the greater was their hatred. They were determined to extinguish the light by putting Christ to death. The haters of God's law, the foundation of his government in heaven and earth, are on the same ground as were the unbelieving Jews. Their defiant power will follow those who keep the commandments of God, and any amount of light will be rejected by them. Their consciences have so long been violated, and their hearts have grown so hard by their choosing darkness rather than light, that they feel that it is a virtue in them to bear false witness, or stoop to almost any course of equivocation or deception, as did the Jews in their rejection of Christ, to gain their object. They reason that the end justifies the means. They virtually crucify the law of the Father as the Jews crucified Christ. Our work should be to embrace every opportunity to present the truth in its purity and simplicity. Where there is any desire or interest to hear the reasons of our faith, those who have dwelt mostly upon the prophecies and the theoretical points of our faith should without delay become Bible students upon practical subjects. They should take a deeper draught at the fountain of divine truth. They should carefully study the life of Christ and his lessons of practical godliness, given for the benefit of all, and the rule of right living for all who should believe on his name. They should be imbued with the spirit of their great exampler and have a high sense of the sacred life of a follower of Christ. Christ met the case of every class in his subjects and manner of teaching. He dined and lodged with rich and poor, and made himself familiar with the interests and occupations of men, that he might gain access to their hearts. The learned and most intellectual were gratified and charmed with his discourses, and yet they were so plain and simple as to be comprehended by the humblest minds. Christ availed himself of every opportunity to give instructions to the people upon the heavenly doctrines and precepts which should be incorporated into their lives, and which would distinguish them from all other religionists because of their holy, elevated character. These lessons of divine instruction are not brought to bear upon men's consciences as they should be. Ministers believing present truth are furnished with discourses by these sermons of Christ, which will be appropriate on almost any occasion. Here is a field of study for the Bible student, which he cannot be interested in without having the spirit of the heavenly teacher in his own heart. Here are subjects which Christ presented to all classes. Thousands of people of every stamp of character, of every grade of society, were attracted and charmed with the matter brought before them. Some ministers who have been long in the work of preaching present truth have made great failures in their labors. They have educated themselves as combatants. They have studied out argumentative subjects for the object of discussion, and these subjects which they have prepared, they love to use. The truth of God is plain, clear, and conclusive. The chain of truth is harmonious, and, in contrast with error, shines with clearness and beauty. The consistency of the truth commends it to the judgment of every heart that is not filled with prejudice. Our preachers present the arguments upon the truth which have been made ready for them, and, if there are no hindrances, the truth bears away the victory. But I was shown that in many cases the poor instrument takes the credit of the victory gained, and the people, who are more earthly than spiritual, praise and honor the instrument, while the truth of God is not exalted by the victory it gained. Those who love to engage in discussion generally lose their spirituality. They do not trust in God as they should. They have the theory of the truth prepared to whip an opponent. The feelings of their own unsanctified hearts have prepared many sharp, close things to use as a snap to their whip to irritate and provoke their opponent. The Spirit of Christ has no part in this. The debater soon thinks he is strong enough while furnished with conclusive arguments to triumph over his opponent, and God is left out of the matter. Some of our ministers have made discussion their principal business. When in the midst of the excitement raised by discussion, they seem nerved up and feel strong and talk strong, and many things pass with the people as all right in the excitement, which in themselves are decidedly wrong, and a shame to him who is guilty of uttering words so unbecoming a Christian minister. These things have a bad influence on ministers who are handling sacred, elevated truths, which are to prove as a savor of life unto life, or death unto death to those who hear them. Generally, the influence of discussions upon our ministers is to make them self-sufficient and exalted in their own estimation. This is not all. Those who love to debate are unfitted for being pastors to the flock. They have trained their minds to meet an opponent and to say sarcastic things, and they cannot come down to meet the hearts that are sorrowing and need comforting. They have also dwelt so much upon the argumentative that they have neglected practical subjects that the flock of God need. And the sermons of Christ, which enter into the everyday life of the Christian, they have but little knowledge of, and they have but little disposition to study them. They have arisen above the simplicity of the work. When they were little in their own eyes, God helped them. Angels of God ministered unto them, and made their labors highly successful in convincing men and women of the truth. But in the training of their minds for discussion, they frequently become coarse and rough. They lose the interest and tender sympathy which should ever attend the efforts of a shepherd of Jesus Christ. Debating ministers are generally disqualified to help the flock where they most need help. They have neglected practical religion in their own hearts and lives, and therefore cannot teach it to the flock. Unless there is an excitement, they do not know how to labor. They seem shorn of their strength. If they try to speak, they seem not to know how to present a subject that is proper or fit for the occasion. When they should present a subject to feed the flock of God, which will reach and melt the heart, they go back to some of the old prepared matter that is stereotyped and go through the arranged arguments which are dry and uninteresting. They bring darkness to the flock instead of light and life, and they also bring darkness to their own souls. Some of our ministers fail to cultivate spirituality, but encourage a show of zeal and a certain activity which rests upon an uncertain foundation. Ministers of calm contemplation, of thought and devotion, of conscience and faith, combined with activity and zeal, are wanted in this age. The two qualities should go together, thought and devotion, activity and zeal. Debating ministers are the most unreliable among us, because they cannot be depended upon when the work goes hard. Bring them into a place where there is but little interest, and they manifest a want of courage, zeal, or real interest themselves. They depend on excitement, created by debate or opposition, as the inebriate depends upon his dram to become enlivened and invigorated. These ministers need to be converted anew. They need to drink deep of the streams which proceed from the eternal rock, the streams of which are unceasing. The eternal welfare of sinners regulated the conduct of Jesus Christ. He went about doing good. Benevolence was the life of his soul. He not only did good to all who came to him soliciting his mercy, but he perseveringly sought them out. He was never elated with applause, or dejected by censure or disappointment. When he met with the greatest opposition and the most cruel treatment, he was of good courage. Christ preached the most important discourse inspiration has given us to only one listener. As he sat upon the well to rest, for he was weary, a Samaritan woman came to draw water, and he saw an opportunity to reach her mind, and through her, to reach the minds of the Samaritans, who were in great darkness and error. Although weary, he presented the truths of his spiritual kingdom, which charmed the heathen woman, and filled her with admiration for Christ. She went forth publishing the news, "Come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ?" This woman's testimony converted many to a belief in Christ. Through her report, many came to hear him for themselves and believed because of his own word. However small may be the number of interested listeners, if their hearts are reached and their understanding convinced, they can carry the report, as did the Samaritan woman, which will raise the interest of hundreds to investigate for themselves. While laboring in places to create an interest, there will be many discouragements. But if at first there seems to be but little interest, it is no evidence that you have mistaken your duty and place of labor. If the interest steadily increases and the people move understanding, not from impulse but from principle, the interest is much more healthful and more durable than to have a great excitement and interest created suddenly and to have the feelings excited by listening to a debate and sharp contest on both sides of the question, for and against the truth. Fierce opposition is created and rapid decisions made and positions taken. There is a feverish state of things. Calm consideration and judgment are wanting. Let this excitement subside, or, if it is managed indiscreetly, reaction takes place, and the interest can never be raised again. The feeling and sympathy were stirred, but the conscience was not convicted. The heart was not broken and humbled before God. In the presentation of unpopular truth, which involves a heavy cross, preachers should be careful that every word is as God would have it. Their words should never cut. They should present the truth in humility, with the deepest love for souls, and an earnest desire for their salvation, and let the truth cut. They should not seek to provoke a debate. They should not defy ministers of other denominations. They should not stand in a position like Goliath's when he defied the armies of Israel. Israel did not defy Goliath, but Goliath made his proud boasts against God and his people. The defying and boasting and railing must come from the opposers of truth, who act the Goliath. But none of this spirit should be seen in those whom God has sent forth to proclaim the last message of warning to a doomed world. Goliath, who defied Israel, trusted in his armor. He terrified the armies of Israel by his defiant, savage boastings, while he made a most imposing display of his armor, which was his strength. David, in his humility and in his zeal for God and his people, proposed to meet this boaster. Saul consented and had his own kingly armor placed upon David, but he would not consent to wear it. He laid off the king's armor, for he had not proved it. He had proved God, and, in trusting in him, had gained special victories. To put on Saul's armor would give the impression that he was a warrior, when he was only little David, who tended the sheep. He did not mean that any credit should be given to the armor of Saul, for his trust was in the Lord God of Israel. He selected a few pebbles from the brook, and with his sling and staff his only weapons, he went forth in the name of the God of Israel to meet the armed warrior. Goliath disdained David, for his appearance was that of a mere youth untaught in the tactics of warfare. Goliath railed upon David and cursed him by his gods. He felt that it was an insult upon his dignity to have a mere stripling, without so much as an armor, come to meet him. He made his boast of what he would do to him. David did not become irritated because he was looked upon as so inferior. Neither did he tremble at his terrible threats. David replied, "Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." David tells Goliath that in the name of the Lord he will do to him the very things Goliath had threatened to do to David. "And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Our ministers should not defy and provoke discussion. Let the defying be on the side of the opposers of God's truth. I was shown that Brother Blank and other ministers have acted too much the part of Goliath. And then, after they had dared and provoked discussion, they trusted to their prepared arguments as Saul wanted David to trust to his armor. They did not, like humble David, trust to the God of Israel and make him their strength. They went forth confident and boastful, like Goliath. They magnified themselves and did not hide behind Jesus. They knew the truth was strong, and they have not humbled their hearts, and in faith trusted in God to give the truth the victory. They have become elated and lost their balance, and frequently the discussions have not been successful, and the result has been an injury to their own souls and to the souls of others. I was shown that some of our young ministers are getting a passion for debating, and that, unless they see their danger, this will prove a snare to them. I was shown that Brother Blank was in great danger. He is training his mind in the wrong direction. He is in danger of getting above the simplicity of the work. When he gets on Saul's armor, if, like David, he has wisdom to lay it off because he has not proved it, he may recover himself before he goes too far. These young preachers should study the practical teachings of Christ, as well as the theoretical, and learn of Jesus that they may have his grace, his meekness, his humility, and lowliness of mind. If they, like David, are brought into a position where God's cause really calls for them to meet a defier of Israel, and if they go forth in the strength of God, relying wholly upon him, he will carry them through and cause his truth to triumph gloriously. Christ has given us an example. Yet Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee." As soon as a preacher comes down from the position a minister should ever occupy, and descends to the comical to create a laugh over his opponent, or when he is sarcastic and sharp and rails upon him, He does that which the Savior of the world did not dare to do, for he places himself upon the enemy's ground. Ministers who contend with the opposers of the truth of God have not merely to meet the men, but Satan and his host of evil angels. Satan watches for a chance to get the advantage of ministers who are advocating the truth, and when they cease to put their entire trust in God, and their words are not in the spirit and love of Christ, the angels of God cannot strengthen and enlighten them. They leave them to their own strength, and evil angels press in their darkness, and, for this reason, sometimes the opponents of the truth seem to have the advantage, and the discussion does more harm than real good. God's servants should come nearer to him. Bryn, blank, 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 and blank, should be seeking to cultivate personal piety rather than to encourage a love of debate. They should be seeking to become shepherds to the flock rather than to be fitting themselves to create an excitement by swaying the feelings of the people. These brethren are in danger of depending more upon their popularity and success with the people as smart debaters than as humble, faithful laborers, or as devoted, meek followers of Jesus Christ, being co-workers with him.